You know, you cannot be too Jewish.
Thank you. I couldn't possibly agree more.
Shalom, and welcome to the Two Jewish Radio Show with Rabbi Sam Kohan and friends, a weekly serving of everything Jewish. We'll have a great hour together today of news, music, comedy, and conversation. In addition to our guest interview, we'll also have a visit from our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Please email your comments to us at twojewishradio18@gmail.com or visit us on the web at twojewishradio.com. The opinions of the host and guests on Two Jewish are their own and not those of the radio station. Two Jewish is paid for by Two Jewish Radio Programs and Podcasts, Tucson, Arizona. And now, here's Rabbi Sam Kohan and Two Jewish.
Shalom. It's finally cooled down here in the Sonoran Desert of Tucson, Arizona, where I live, which is certainly welcome. We set a record this year for days over 100 degrees. Not a record we welcome or take pride in, of course. While it's hotter in Phoenix, 5 to 7 degrees typically, which also doesn't cool down as much at night, by the way, and it's hotter in Yuma even than in Phoenix, and it's probably hotter in hell than either place, 100 days over 100 degrees is still pretty darned unpleasant, even for us long-term desert dwellers, which makes it clear that perhaps we human beings aren't doing things quite the way we should. There's a complicated idea that's been circulating over recent decades. It says that the geologic epoch we are in should be called the Anthropocene, which means the human-impacted era. While the origins of this notion go back to the 1930s, and Anthropocene was a phrase used by Soviet Union scientists way back in the 1960s, the term was first popularized in the West by American biologist Eugene Sturmer in the late 80s, and then became much more prominent after the work of the Dutch chemist and Nobel Prize winner Paul Crutzen brought it to attention in the early 2000s. Unlike the Jurassic or Cretaceous epoch or any of the other geologic divisions of time, this one, the unofficial Anthropocene, is the first period in our Earth's 5 billion years or so when a living species has permanently changed the state of the planet. Geologists haven't officially named our current period the Anthropocene. They can't agree whether it started at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution or maybe when the Atomic Age began with the detonations of the 1940s and 50s, or with the circulation of microplastics, or perhaps even earlier with the extinction of many animal and plant species that continues apace. But there is a general understanding in the scientific world that our Earth has been so impacted by human civilization in recent decades that this is a unique time in our planet's life. And the understanding is that something profound is happening to the world, and it's neither pleasant nor positive. The evidence of human-created changes cited by scientists include the dramatic rise in greenhouse gases and the general warming trend in climate and ocean temperatures all over the Earth. You know, climate change, global warming. That includes the dramatic increase in the number and severity of major storms and natural disasters, and the decline in the ice shields on the North and South Poles, and so on. The industrial production of a tremendous number of products that do not biodegrade and consequently transform the land and sea with waste, such as the Great Pacific Ocean Garbage Patch, and now the Great North Atlantic Garbage Patch, microplastics more generally, as well as forever chemicals that stay, well, forever in our environment. The extinction of a large number of species of animals and plants, going on quickly even now. Massive deforestation and rainforest destruction, and the presence of nuclear fallout from hydrogen bomb tests in the actual rocks formed in sediment and lake beds and elsewhere. The impact of humans on the world is undeniable. The question of how we best seek to restore some balance between our own species and the only planet we can live on is crucial. I am baffled by the fact that this issue has barely surfaced in the current election season. While some deluded people still believe we will somehow revive the massively polluting coal industry in America and should further expand the use of greenhouse gases, Others simply ignore the fact that we're losing an important race to stabilize our Earth's climate and, well, surface. This planet, according to the Jewish understanding, is a gift from God. It is our duty to serve as stewards of this world, to protect it from destruction, to help it flourish. It is, according to Jewish belief, a sin to destroy nature. Bal Tashchit is a foundational Jewish ethic. Do not destroy nature. This past year has been one in which we Jews have been focused on Iranian, Palestinian, and Lebanese terrorist wars against Israel, on fighting anti-Semitism here and abroad, on security and safety for synagogues and Jews everywhere. The truth is that there remains a larger issue. If we do not find a way to protect our planet from the destruction we are allowing to take place every day, we won't have much left to protect. The record of our Anthropocene epoch cannot simply be about how we have squandered the magnificent world we have been gifted by our Creator. It must reflect our understanding of the responsibility to preserve and protect the natural world. And it is something we all need to act on in order to repair the damage we have already permitted to occur. To play us in this morning, Too Jewish, here's Psalm 121. I lift my eyes to the mountains from whence my help comes. It comes from God, the maker of these heavens and earth.
אל ייתן למות רגלך, אל ינום שומריך. הנה לא ינום, לא יישן שומר ישראל.
That was Essa Enai, Psalm 121, a reminder to preserve the world we have been given by God. Our guest this morning on Too Jewish is Eric Fingerhut, President and CEO of Jewish Federations of North America, JFNA, the umbrella organization of local federations all across the continent. They have new programs dealing with anti-Semitism and security, and they are working in a variety of ways in a profoundly challenging time for American Jews to address those problems. Hear all about it when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish. Do you know someone who personally made a major difference for the whole Jewish people? An individual who's done important work for Klal Yisrael and deserves to be highly recognized for that effort. As president of the Cohen Memorial Foundation, I'm grateful that the modest cash awards we started more than 10 years ago have grown into a substantial amount of unrestricted funds given to winners, with the help of donors like many of you. The foundation, named for my grandparents, Rabbi Samuel S. Cohen and Irma Cohen, makes these awards for important service to Klal Yisrael, the entire Jewish people. That service can be in one of four activities: unity, education, creative arts, or rescue. Past Cohen Award recipients are remarkable people who've done outstanding work. If you know someone who qualifies for a Cohen Foundation Award, please go to CohenAward.com, CohenAward.com, and fill out the simple nomination form. That website is CohenAward.com. Nominate an individual or donate yourself. Do it for the whole Jewish people. We are delighted to welcome to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Eric Fingerhut is the president and CEO of the Jewish Federations of North America, JFNA, who has been in that position for, I guess, about almost 5 years now. He was president and CEO of Hillel prior to that, and he is part of a major JFNA initiative addressing anti-Semitism. Good morning and welcome to Two Jewish.
Good morning, Rabbi. Good to talk to you.
So this is maybe the most challenging time for Jews in America and for Jewish Federation, I think, since the Yom Kippur War. Is that an accurate feeling?
I absolutely agree with that, yes.
How is JFNA addressing the security concerns that so many American Jews have now?
Yes, it's obviously a very challenging time for the safety and security of the Jewish community, and Jewish Federation are acting comprehensively to address it. Every one of the 146 Jewish federations that make up the Jewish Federations of North America, and really essentially this means every Jewish community, under the umbrella of their federation, has built a comprehensive community security initiative. This includes a professional security expert. Usually it's somebody who's got experience in law enforcement, worked for one of the major law enforcement agencies, local or national. And they would then work with every synagogue, every JCC, Hillel, Chabad, et cetera, every Jewish agency in their service area to make sure that there's a coordinated security plan for that community that's working closely with local police and the other law enforcement agencies. And then all of them together work under an umbrella, which of course includes the Jewish Federations of North America and our partner, an organization we helped start called the Secure Community Network. As a matter of fact, just this week, I was with, at a conference with every one of the security directors of each community, organized by the Secure Community Network, for them to be learning from each other and updating each other on what's happening, what we know about, and how to respond. And this includes not only the direct security efforts, cameras and security guards and the local relations with local law enforcement, but also intelligence gathering. What we learn from the internet and from other sources about potential risks, and making sure that information is collected and distributed out to all of our security agencies. So there's a comprehensive effort underway. We call it Live Secure. This was a campaign that we've had the last couple of years, really started after the Tree of Life terrible tragedy, which was in October of 2018, which was a real wake-up call, because we realized that these threats, if they could occur in that beautiful community of Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh, could certainly occur anywhere. And we've seen that. We've seen it in Colleyville, Texas. We've seen it in Poway, California. And so we know we need to be at the highest level of security in every community. And that's what Live Secure has undertaken, and what we are largely now have completed the build out.
And we will talk much more with Eric Fingerhut. He's head of Jewish Federations of North America, not only about anti-Semitism and security, but a variety of issues. And we come back in a moment here on Two Jewish. Beit Simcha, the House of Joy, a wonderful Jewish synagogue in the Catalina foothills and northwest Tucson, celebrates a great array of services, classes, and events this fall. Established 6 years ago by great congregants and me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, Beit Simcha is a vibrant, vital community that strives every day to serve God with joy. Progressive congregation in northwest Tucson and the foothills, Beit Simcha is open to everybody throughout the metropolitan area, providing weekly Shabbat services, youth and adult education academy courses, social justice opportunities, outreach, and cultural Jewish programming. Join us in person for Shabbat services or come on Facebook Live. Go to our website, BeitSimchaTucson.org, BeitSimchaTucson.org. We welcome members and guests in our sanctuary in person. Call 520-276-5675 for more information. Religious school is available for school-aged children or grandchildren. Join us in our fabulous Hebrew school, Bar and Bat Mitzvah programs, Torah Tykes Experience Confirmation, and teen programs, all in a fun, relaxed setting with great Jewish learning. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org. Beit Simcha services, classes, and events are open to everyone. Friday night services are at 6:30 p.m., always followed by a delicious Oneg Shabbat. Shabbat morning Saturday services are at 10 a.m., preceded at 9 a.m. by Torah study, always with bagels and lox, led by me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. You can also come to services on our Facebook page. It's Beit Simcha Tucson, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson. All of our services are available there, and all of our extensive Adult Education Academy classes, including our introductory Judaism series, which is just beginning, are live and on Zoom. Go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org, to access them. For more information about Beit Simcha, to come to services, religious school, and Torah Tykes programs, Bar and Bat Mitzvah, confirmation, and high school programs, and rich array of Adult Education Academy courses taught live and on Zoom, and all of our services in person and on Facebook, go to BeitSimchaTucson.org, B-E-I-T-S-I-M-C-H-A, Tucson.org, or call 520-276-5675. That's 520-276-5675. BeitSimchaTucson.org. Join me, Rabbi Sam Kohan, in the fastest growing Jewish congregation in all of Southern Arizona. If you have a question, comment, compliment, or criticism, kvetch or kvel, please email us at 2JewishRadio18@gmail.com. That's T-O-O, JewishRadio18@gmail. Or visit our website, 2JewishRadio.com. You can hear all past and present shows through the website. Streaming us from there, downloading us from the Apple iTunes Store is very popular Jewish podcast. Top 10 in America, according to Moment Magazine, over 200,000 downloads on Podbean and on Spotify, too. Post a rating, review 2 Jewish wherever you listen to us. Those comments help. The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of Southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen. 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470. We welcome our expert on the international Jewish scene, Tom Price. Good morning, Tom.
Good morning, Rabbi.
Tom, you just returned from another one of your remarkable journeys around the world, or apart. It's not this time, not around the world, just to the Balkans and Georgia and some really interesting places, places that we may not realize have vital and vibrant Jewish communities.
Yeah, this was one of my, actually the first Jewish heritage tour that I did since pre-COVID. So I was worried about being a little rusty, but we visited places that I knew well, and it was the esoteric nature of these places that attracted most of the people in the group. the group, although it was a Jewish heritage tour, was only half Jewish and half not. And we met in Vienna, where I arrived 5 days before the group so that I could observe Yom Kippur and spend time with old friends of mine who live there before having to deal with the group. And then we flew together on our first full day together to Sarajevo, which I want to come back to. But I know you want to start with what was our last stop, which is Georgia.
I do, and I do not mean the Georgia that has Atlanta.
No, it's the other Georgia, which is a country in the North Caucasus, just slightly to the northeast of Turkey. And Georgia has a very old and very specific Jewish community, which traces its origins to the people who were exiled at the time of the destruction of the first temple.
Yep, 2,600 years ago.
It goes way back. And there has always been both an urban and a rural Jewish community. There are little mountain villages where everybody's Jewish. I don't know to what extent those villages are still thriving, because the vast majority of Georgian Jews left the country while it was still under Soviet control and moved either to Israel or in smaller, much smaller numbers, to the U.S., Canada, whatever. But overwhelmingly to Israel, where there's a large Georgian community that's pretty much keeps to itself. It sort of self-ghettoizes. The Georgians have their own traditions. They have fabulous food. They have the oldest wine industry in the world on a national basis. Mm. They age wine instead of in wooden barrels like most countries do. They age wine in huge terracotta urns that are buried underground. They're called kvevri. So we did a lot of wine tasting. The only wine we had which wasn't great was at the kosher restaurant in Tbilisi, which is called the King David.
Very disappointing.
It's situated right behind the main synagogue, but there are several active synagogues there. And, you know, the food was great. It's just that the wine, since it had like three different hechshers on it and three different rabbis signed off on it, I think each one threw in a little bit of sawdust, and it was the only disappointing one.
One hopes not, but yes, I understand. So there must be, obviously, it's got a kosher restaurant, maybe multiple kosher restaurants,
yes,
you
several.
Said. Number of synagogues.
Yes.
Clearly a very vital Jewish community.
Absolutely. Not as significant as it first was. When I was in the former Soviet Union in 1971, Tbilisi was one of our favorite stops because the Jews there were not intimidated by the regime. Basically, Georgia was a country where the Soviets didn't try to scare people away from religion. The vast majority of people belong to the Georgian Church, which is an autocephalous church like the Armenian Church.
An Orthodox, well, Orthodox Church or not well, quite?
If you want to see the world in binary terms, and so all the Christians are either Orthodox or Roman Catholic or Protestant.
Okay, that wouldn't be binary. That would be, but yes,
right.
I got the idea.
Okay. So, I mean, they call themselves Georgian Orthodox, but they have their own equivalent to the Pope, their own liturgy. It's exactly parallel to Armenia.
To the Armenian
and
Church.
Armenia,
sure.
And Georgia are the two oldest national churches in the world.
Right.
They were the first two countries to convert to Christianity on a nationwide basis, vaguely around the year 300 of the Common Era. And they share a lot of cultural things in common. What's funny is their alphabets look very similar to foreigners, but they're completely different. So reading one language doesn't ensure that you can read another. And maybe next week we'll talk about the linguistic, social, and political changes that I've seen in Georgia just in the past 5 years, let alone the past 50 years.
Thanks, Tom. Fascinating. The only thing I knew about the Georgian Jewish community was a movie made in Israel years ago called A Late Marriage, which I highly recommend, but looking forward to learning more.
Okay.
It's time now for our old Jewish joke of the week. Jewish humor, your Bubby and Zadie knew, brought to you by Too Jewish as a public service. ¶¶ A woman calls Mount Sinai Hospital and asks how Mrs. Schwartz is doing in room 102. The nurse puts her on hold for a minute, comes back and reports Mrs. Schwartz in room 102 is doing very well. Her lab work came back, everything's normal, her doctor is pleased, she'll be able to go home soon. Yay! Shouts the caller. You must be a close relative to be so happy, says the nurse. No, says the caller. I'm Mrs. Schwartz in room 102. Nobody tells me anything. That is definitely an old Jewish joke of the week with all the HIPAA laws and what they can tell you. Anyway, special feature of Too Jewish just for you. You should live and be well and stay out of the hospital. And now a word of Torah. This week we read the portion of Lech Lecha, which includes God's great commandment to Avram, Abram. Lech Lecha me'artzecha u'mimoladetcha u'mibeit avicha. Leave, go from your country and your homeland and the house of your father to a land that I will show you. It is the very beginning of monotheism, the belief in one God, the beginning of Judaism. It will prove to be the beginning of our connection to the land of Israel as well, a dramatic and powerful moment. The fascinating thing about Lech Lecha is not that God commands Avram, later to be renamed Abraham, to leave everything he has known. After all, if he is to create a new religion and remake belief in our world, he will need to leave polytheism and the belief in multiple gods and the pagan society that doesn't recognize the concept of supreme justice and divine power. It is a corrupt, dishonest, and ethically failed civilization. No, if you want to live a life of goodness and blessing, sometimes you just need to leave home in order to do it. So Abraham picked up. He left the sophisticated, morally challenged city-states of Babylon. He journeyed outward to find God and found a new religion. That journey of differentiation was pivotal to all human history. If Abraham doesn't just do what God commands, there is no Judaism or Christianity or Islam or monotheism or Western civilization at all. But what's most fascinating about Abraham's actions in this week's Torah portion of Lech Lecha is that after God commanded him to go, he simply went without argument or controversy. That strikes me as a very un-Jewish approach. After all, the essence of Jewish culture seems to be argument and discussion. If you were directed to leave everything you'd ever known and told to move somewhere unspecified, wouldn't you at least complain a little? And don't think for a moment that Abraham is incapable of arguing with God. In fact, he proves it in next week's Torah portion. He argues and bargains with God to the last degree, trying to defend the few righteous people of Sodom and Gomorrah. No, something else is at work. The essential understanding that sometimes you just must move on, leave what you know, embrace the journey. In order to fully realize who you can become, you must first leave who you have been. It's an exciting, exhilarating, daunting prospect. Dangerous, yet essential. But if we can choose to take the first steps, we may, like Abraham, reap rich rewards. When we return in a moment, Eric Fingerhut, CEO of the Jewish Federations of North America, JFNA, explains how the Federation movement is changing and dealing with the extreme pressures of a profoundly challenging year. Hear all about it when we come back in a moment on Too Jewish.
We continue with our Too Jewish update on news of Jews around the world with commentary.
Chicago Mayor Brandon Johnson condemned the shooting of an Orthodox Jewish man walking to synagogue last Shabbat, but somehow he managed not to mention the victim's Jewish identity. He was rightly criticized for that. Other political leaders condemned the shooting and, of course, noted the Jewish identity of the victim. The attack took place last Saturday in the heavily Jewish neighborhood of West Rogers Park. The suspect, Sidi Mohammed Abdullahi, 22 years old, then engaged in a shootout with police. On behalf of the city of Chicago, our heartfelt thoughts and prayers are with the victim and his loved ones from this weekend's shooting incident that took place in Rogers Park, Johnson wrote 4 days after the shooting, adding that the tragic event should never have happened. Abdullahi was charged with 14 felonies, including attempted first-degree murder, but he has not been charged with hate crimes, which has drawn criticism from local Jews. Deborah Silverstein, who represents the area in the Chicago City Council, chided Johnson for omitting the victim's Jewish identity. The victim was a Jewish man wearing traditional Jewish garb, walking to a Jewish place of worship on the Jewish day of rest, Silverstein said. Don't erase his identity. Don't try to minimize the fear and anxiety my community feels after this attack. We're scared, and we need to know that our mayor has our back. The local Jewish Community Relations Council denounced the mayor's statement as well, posting, "What will it take for you to acknowledge the Jewish community?" Johnson also took heat for waiting until Tuesday to condemn the shooting. The criticism marks the latest chapter in the Chicago mayor's rocky relationship with the local Jewish community. In January, Johnson cast the tie-breaking vote to pass a resolution in the city council calling for a ceasefire in Gaza, making Chicago the largest U.S. city to do so. The resolution drew rebukes from local Jewish groups, including Chicago's Federation and the local branch of the ADL. Ahead of this summer's Democratic National Convention in Chicago, Johnson called the war in Gaza genocidal. This week's criticism extended beyond Chicago. Representative Richie Torres of New York, a staunchly pro-Israel advocate, also called Johnson out. Why not mention why the victim was shot? Because he was Jewish. Why not mention where the victim was shot? En route to synagogue, Torres wrote. Any mayor who cannot be bothered to acknowledge the anti-Semitism of a hate crime against a Jewish man heading to a synagogue is unworthy of the office he holds. Gun violence is common in Chicago. A tracker from a local ABC affiliate shows daily shootings, but the nature of this incident has drawn particular attention. Illinois' Jewish governor, J.B. Pritzker, released a statement referencing a potential anti-Semitic motive. "I am deeply troubled by the shooting of an Orthodox Jewish man as he walked to his synagogue in West Rogers Park on Saturday," Pritzker wrote. "I pray for the victim, his family, our entire Orthodox Jewish community, and I support all efforts by law enforcement to investigate and prosecute this senseless act of violence." Pritzker continued, "The motivation of the shooter deserves a complete and thorough examination to determine if this should additionally be charged as a hate crime." Illinois Senator Dick Durbin, a member of the Democratic leadership in the Senate, also referred to the recent rise in anti-Semitism in his statement. "This attack on a Jewish man in Chicago during the Jewish holidays is unacceptable. Anti-Semitism is on the rise in America. We must remain laser-focused on rooting it out. I stand with the Jewish community in Chicago and across the country." Abdullahi was due in court last week, but he missed the appearance because he was still in the hospital. He's now expected to show up November 7th. The victim, 39 years old, was released from the hospital. Chicago Police Department Superintendent Larry Snelling, as well as some Jewish leaders, have urged patience on the hate crimes designation. "There's been a lot of information circulating about the shooting. We ask that the public not rush to judgment in this situation," Snelling said. "We're continuing to investigate based on the facts and evidence available." A sticking point has been footage captured on a nearby security camera that appeared to show Abdullahi shouting "Allahu Akbar," God is great, in Arabic. According to police, the comment was made during Abdullahi's engagement with police, not when he attacked his Jewish victim. Regardless of the charges, Jewish leaders say the shooting rattled a Jewish community in Chicago that was already on high alert. "Saturday's crime feels like a hate crime," David Goldenberg, the Midwest Regional Director for the ADL, said. "Regardless of where the investigation lands, Chicago's Jewish community has been rocked. Saturday's shooting, just the latest." In another hate crime incident, an unprovoked attacker slashed the face of a visibly Jewish man in a crosswalk in Crown Heights, Brooklyn. I assume he was wearing black coat and hat. The Crown Heights Volunteer Emergency Services Team, Shmira, is assisting the New York City Police Department in ensuring the attacker is apprehended. New York State Comptroller Thomas DiNapoli stated recently that anti-Semitic incidents accounted for 65% of all felony hate crimes in NYC and New York City in 2023. Across all of New York State, 88% of religious-based hate crimes target Jewish individuals. In Israel, Kalman Bar was appointed as the new Ashkenazi chief rabbi. He won 77 votes in the chief rabbinate elections, reheld last week. The election was a runoff between Kalman Bar, who is Haredi, ultra-Orthodox, and the chief rabbi of Netanya, and Rabbi Micha Halevi, who is religious Zionist and the chief rabbi of Petah Tikva. The two were tied in the first election back on September 29th, in which Rabbi David Yosef was elected Sephardic chief rabbi. The elections for chief rabbi are conducted by a 150-member statutory electoral body. The final tally was 77-58 in favor of Rabbi Bar. Bar's election marks a political victory of the Degel HaTorah faction over the Sephardic Orthodox Party, Shas, and the Religious Zionist Party, the RZP. The Religious Zionist Party and Shas reportedly cut a deal where the Religious Zionist Party supported Shas's candidate for Sephardic Chief Rabbi Yosef in exchange for Shas's support of the Religious Zionist candidate for Ashkenazi Chief Rabbi, but it didn't turn out that way. The electoral body included 140 members after the Chief Rabbinate Council refused to comply with a High Court of Justice, tried to force them to consider appointing women rabbis among its 10 representatives on the electoral body. And that's the Two Jewish News of Jews Round the World. We welcome back to Two Jewish our guest this morning. Eric Fingerhut is the President and CEO of the Jewish Federations of North America, JFNA. He was previously President and CEO of Hillel for 6 or 7 years. He has also been a U.S. Congressman, head of Chancellor of the Ohio University System. Really quite a varied, I just have to ask you this. What's the hardest job you've ever had?
Well, I think it has to be this current responsibility, Rabbi, and not just because, the breadth of the issues that the Jewish Federation system addresses on behalf of the community, but also the time in which we live. Since I started, you mentioned about 5 years ago, we had the COVID crisis, in which we had to mobilize to make sure that all the institutions of our community were supported and sustained through a long period when they didn't have revenue or participants. And then we had the Ukraine, and we still have the war in Ukraine, which has so threatened the Jewish community there. And our federation system has responded, raising over $100 million. And then, of course, since October 7th, as you mentioned, not only the response to the humanitarian needs in Israel, response to what happened on October 7th and the subsequent war, but the rise in anti-Semitism in America. So these have been very, very challenging times. And it's not like, one problem ends and then you move on to the next. They continue. So we're still dealing with the war in Ukraine, even as we deal with the war in Israel. And we're still dealing with anti-Semitism, even as the war in Israel continues. So, all of these things added together make this a very challenging time for our community and therefore for the organizations that lead the community.
The Jewish Federation movement itself has changed quite a bit, I would say, over the last decade or so. Can you talk about some of that evolution too?
You go through different phases in the life of a community when, if the community is doing well and all the institutions are doing well, maybe they, feel the role of federations, less dramatically. When times are challenged is when you really need, an organization that can rally the community and lead, and bring everyone together. For example, this last October 7th, a couple of weeks ago, there were over 400 local events in over 183 communities, and in most of them, it was a single unified event that brought the whole community together under umbrella. Again, these were mostly sponsored, led by federations. The Jewish Federations of North America helped provide some grant funding and others so that we could do these. But that's the kind of role we played. Many of your listeners are probably familiar with the March for Israel that occurred last November. That was organized by the Jewish Federations together with the Council of Presidents. So the leadership, being the, you know, helping rally the community, all segments of the community, to work together to address crises like we've been experiencing in America and Israel and around the world, I think helps people understand and rallies people to the work of their federation. So we're seeing, I mean, there's been tremendous growth in the work of federations and the resources they've raised and in the reach and expanse of the things they've done. Again, for example, the security that we previously discussed. You know, 5 years ago, maybe there were a dozen security programs led by federations around the country. Today, there's, well over 100, and soon we'll have every one of the 146 federations covered with these professional programs. So that's the kind of response you're seeing, and I think that's why people feel the leadership that their federations are providing.
I'm going to ask in a somewhat different area, maybe a controversial one. How the umbrella of the Jewish Federations goes very broadly, but there are organizations, Jewish organizations, that sometimes aren't included and maybe can't be included. When you were at Hillel, you dealt with J Street U and some anti-Zionist elements. How does the Federation view, say, J Street as an organization today?
Yeah, well, look, the issue of what J Street is more an issue you want to address the Conference of Presidents, which is the place where other Jewish organizations collect under an umbrella. But there should be no doubt that on behalf of any of your listeners to this important podcast that Jewish federations are strongly Zionist organizations. We were there. We helped in the creation of the State of Israel. We've helped in the building of this amazing Jewish state. We joy at all the successes. We mourn at all the losses. We've raised, as you may know, over $850 million in the first year since October 7th, 2023, to help every sector of Israel society cope with the losses that have been suffered this last year. We're missions that go constantly, people going back and forth. We have an office in Jerusalem with a full staff, and many of the larger community federations also have a full-time staff that works together. This is Israel is in our hearts and our soul, and we're proudly Zionists.
Recently Halloween brought out it brings out a lot of people, going and walking around and getting candy, a lot of parties, had the possibility of bringing out a lot of anti-Semites. Just been a very rough year in so many ways. What was the Jewish Federation program in dealing with that problem?
Yes, look, whenever there is an occasion like Halloween that brings out, first of all, brings a lot of people outside, but also encourages behavior, costumes and other, and other types of activities, in this time of high levels of anti-Semitism, and a threatening environment, we must simply be, on high alert. And so, as I've mentioned, we now have a full-time security program in every community that's in touch with every single institution, every synagogue, every JCC. We are collecting any information regarding anti-Semitic costumes and threats and such that occur. Everyone is in touch with their local police to make sure that appropriate security is around the synagogues and other Jewish institutions on Halloween. And it's simply one of those times we have to make sure that all of our systems of security are operating at the fullest level.
The leadership of Jewish federations in North America What it's got to be as complicated as it gets. I'm just thinking about the fact that, you know, what was it Golda Meir said? She was the president of, at the time, you know, 2 million presidents.
Well, you know, look, it's one of the, it is complicated, but it's also one of the strengths of our community. First of all, I think the diversity of the Jewish community is a strength, not a weakness. You know, we don't dress alike, we don't pray alike, we don't eat alike, we have different political views. But when we come together around the things that we have in common, we're an enormously powerful force. So in responding to anti-Semitism, in supporting Israel, these things create, you know, enormous energy. You know, I always remind people that the goal is to be unified, is to have unity, not unanimity. We don't have unanimity on anything, but we can be unified and we can work together and have unity to share the things that we you know, to act on the things that we care about. And so that's our goal right now, and that's what we're doing. And in that level, you know, having many different leaders, you know, using your Golda Meir quote, is a plus. We have lay leaders, volunteer leaders in every federation, the board chairs who are significant leaders in their businesses and industries, in academia, you know, in medicine, in the media, in all of the different reaches of life. And so, as great as it is to have wonderful professional colleagues that I'm privileged to have who work in this field, it's our volunteer leaders, the board chairs and the officers of our federation who give us that broad reach and also remind people that we don't have to agree on everything to act together in concert on behalf of the Jewish people in the state of Israel.
This has been, as we've said now several times, such a challenging year. As we move forward and we continue to hope for peace and a resolution for what has been such a challenging time, what anticipated needs do you see for Israel in this coming year?
So I think that because the war is still so actively being fought, and of course we're following every twist, you know, every development, you know, thrilling with the progress that the IDF is making in against Hezbollah, against Iran, and against Hamas, but also mourning the losses and tragedies. We're not able to see as clearly the magnitude of the impact this war is having on the families and just Israeli society. You know, we've lost, of course, you know, I think the number is now over 700, soldiers, chayalim, both on October 7th and since. Unfortunately, it seems every day now, you know, in Lebanon, there's been a new loss added to that. These are martyrs and heroes of our people. At the same time, of course, families and communities that are devastated, you know, I think we've seen something on the order of 60 new children who lost their fathers in the last few days of the fighting. So the needs that are associated with this is going to become more and more apparent, and we're going to just be with it as long as it has to be. And also remember, these are many of the reservists have been fighting all year. Their businesses have suffered. So therefore their family's economy has suffered and therefore the communities economically have suffered as well. And then there's also just the plain devastation. I mean, the North has been evacuated for a year and the communities have been bombed and how, you know, thousands of houses destroyed, community centers, schools, all of this work awaits us. But we will, as we built the state of Israel, and as the people who's the generations that came before us in the leadership roles in the Jewish community built the state of Israel, so we will rebuild the state of Israel, and it will be stronger, Bezrat Hashem, than ever before. And we will, we will be by her side always.
Where can people go to find out more about Jewish Federations of North America, about the security initiatives as well?
Yeah, so just you can come to www.jewishfederations.org, and that'll direct you to all, to your local federation, also to some of the major projects we've talked about, like Live Secure, which is our community security project.
Eric, thank you so much, and the best of luck, and may you continue to stay strong. Chazak v'amatz.
Rabbi, I thank you. Thank you for having me, and b'yachad ninatzeach.
Halavai. I'm Yisrael Chai. When we come back on Two Jewish, we'll hear about next week's guest get a final musical play out.
The stories we share last a lifetime and are passed down from generation to generation. Known for our compassionate commitment to the families we serve, Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery has faithfully served the Tucson community and the Jewish community for over 100 years. We help thousands of families plan and carry out celebrations of loved ones in unique and special ways and assist them in sharing those lifetimes of stories meaningfully. The most beautiful and tranquil final resting place in all of southern Arizona, Evergreen's tall pines shade peaceful grassy fields. You can count on Evergreen for superior service and the highest degree of integrity. Our informative, well-trained staff is here to assist you with a full range of on-site services. Call Evergreen, 520-888-7470, 520-888-7470. While we serve the whole community, our experience conducting Jewish funerals, Reform, Conservative, and Orthodox, is second to none. We have sections dedicated to all religious faiths, can help you arrange for your future needs or your immediate ones. Whether you choose to hold a traditional funeral service or a completely individualized ceremony, either in person or online or both, our goal is to help you create a meaningful, personalized service based upon your unique needs in a place of reflection, tradition, and serenity. Evergreen Mortuary and Cemetery offers the best to the community and to you. Call 520-888-7470. To speak to a family advisor at Evergreen, call 520-888-7470.
Thanks for being here with us this morning on Two Jewish with me, Rabbi Sam Kohan. Join us next week. Our guest will be Linda Ambrose Brenneman, author of The Pulitzer Saga, the recovery of eight generations of a previously unknown Jewish family history. Really interesting. And join us at Congregation Beit Simcha each Friday night. Shabbat services and Oneg Shabbat at 6:30 p.m., Saturday morning, 2, 9 a.m. Torah study, 10 a.m. services, Torah reading and Kiddush, live in person and available on our Facebook page, Beit Simcha Tucson. Our playout this morning comes from Eyal Golan. His terrific Am Yisrael Chai, the people of Israel live. It promises we shall see better days ahead. So may it be. My friends, may you have a Shavua Tov, a good week, a healthy week, and a week we pray profoundly of justice and peace.
Bekarov tizrach ha-shemesh, neda yamim yafim me'ele, halev nilham ba-deagot. Kulam yachzeru habayta, nechake lahem lemata, halvay neda psorot tovot. Ki am ha-netzach le'olam lo mefahed, אפילו כשקשה לראות כולם ביחד אף אחד פה לא בודד שישרפו המלחמות עם ישראל חי אם לא נשכח תמיד להיות מאוחדים עם ישראל חי
נחלתנו לא תיפול כעת רוחנו מסביב ברזל של חרבות ויונה תפרוס כנפיים התקווה בת שנות אלפיים עוד נצא לשיר ברחובות כי עם הנצח לעולם לא מפחד אפילו כשקשה לראות כולם ביחד אף אחד פה לא בודד שישרפו המלחמות
Sponsored by two Jewish radio programs, Tucson, Arizona.